just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayle. Here's Mike.
Hello, good morning. Welcome to the latest episode of Money Management. We are your antidote to conventional wisdom. My name is Mike Mayle. I'm with the Opus 111 Group, and we're all set for another hour of financial news, a recap of what's been going on in the financial world this past week, and most importantly, how it all affects you. Well, markets have certainly been buoyed this week by a bunch of economic data that has given us some positive indications about inflation that may be cooling. So let's start with the proverbial data dump and see just where we finished the week. It was very positive across the board. The Dow ended at 34,509. The S&P closed the week at 4,505. The NASDAQ at 14,113. Russell 2000 ended at 1,929. Gold settled at $1,959 an ounce. Silver at $25.12 an ounce. We had crude ending up a little bit at $75.42 a barrel. 10-year treasury at 3.82%, and soft white wheat ticked back up to $7.04 a bushel. Now, what I want to do this week is to start with the economic aspect, news, whatever, to kind of give you the context under which we're operating. And then also, of course, talk about investing in the markets, and then the outlook from some folks about where they think things are going from this point forward. Now, a key driver of the GDP growth, this recent GDP growth, has been the continued strength of the labor market. We've had 30 consecutive months of job gains, and our unemployment rate that hit a 54-year low in April. And it isn't much above that now. Separately, and this has something to do with the housing market, 62% of U.S. mortgage holders currently have a mortgage rate on their homes below 4%. 92% have a rate below 6%. So with current mortgage rates where they are, that suggests that many existing homeowners are staying put because they don't want to trade up to a higher interest payment, and so that keeps the amount of homes available for sale lower. And we did get a note from Social Security Administration this week that suggested that next year's COLA, cost of living allowance, would be estimated at 3%, certainly down from this year, but again, inflation's down. So that would raise, according to those folks, the current average monthly benefit by about $54. And just one aside, this is no news to folks who live in the state of Washington. Which states are paying the most for gas? This is in the country. And Washington, of course, has the pole position. California, Hawaii, Oregon, Alaska. In Washington, that was quoted at $4.95 a gallon, by the way. And now I find it quite interesting that the state's quote-unquote leaders are taking aim at the oil industry about their profits. Now, these guys, the so-called state leaders, are the ones that set all the taxes and whatever on gasoline. They're the ones that drove the price up. Oil producers have little or no impact at all on the price of oil and therefore what their margins are. So don't let those guys blow smoke at you, okay? About the Fed, you may have heard of a guy named Jerome Powell. He's chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and he has consistently stated his intention to get inflation down to their goal of 2%. And so far, their hawkish stance, as they call it, seems to be justified. The fact is that the forecast for the economy has improved. Not that long ago, we talked just a few months, Wall Street fully expected the economy to be way low by now. And I think we can agree that that hasn't happened. The stock market has been signaling a stronger economy for a few weeks, for those willing to pay close attention. The sectors that have been doing well: industrials, materials, financials, energy. Energy was the best sector this past week. They've been, those four have been leading the S&P 500 since early June. So, you know, you can kind of take this as a signal that Wall Street, quote unquote, is growing kind of skeptical about this recession hypothesis. You know, if pricing pressures remain in the economy, the Fed's job may not be done. It's as if everyone was prepared for a recession except for the economy. And about that recession stuff. You know, I'm not convinced that the likelihood of a recession was ever particularly high. As those folks who listen to me regularly can attest, this is largely due to the fact the economy has been and continues to be. It's helped by three massive, what you might call, tailwinds. And those tailwinds include the unprecedented trillions of dollars worth of excess savings accumulated by folks during the big handout period, the eye-poppingly high number of job openings, and those record high levels of core capital expense orders. Now, why are they notable? They're what they're called leading indicators. They give you a sense of what's coming. GDP, those kinds of things, CPI, consumer price index, those are all trailing indicators. They're historical. They're just telling you what's already happened. You mean the sense of leading indicators, you know, the excess savings represent extra money that has yet to be spent. Kind of, what would you say, potential energy. Elevated job openings represent hiring that has yet to happen, so that also means incremental consumer spending power that has yet to be realized. And the capital expense orders, those are capital goods businesses, that things meant to last more than 3 years, that have yet to put in place, so there is work to be done by the manufacturers and more capacity coming for businesses that have ordered this stuff. So these narratives all showed up at the same time in 2021 as the economy was reopening amid all the bug stuff. And over the past 2 years, there's been lots of developments in the economy and markets that have presented threats to these tailwinds, but the data always has suggested otherwise. So you look through the headlines, as I have been wont to say many days, and creating the wall of worry, Russia invading the Ukraine, hiking rates, yield curve inverting, inflation rates, highest level in decades, then housing market turning, and so on, ad nauseum. In spite of all that background noise, consumer finances remain strong, job openings remain high, and businesses continue to invest for future growth during all this. And now, 2 years after the fact, these tailwinds are very much intact, while showing some signs of cooling, to be sure. Most economists believe there's still a couple $100 million sitting in consumers' bank accounts. And while the level of job openings is slightly off its high, there continues to be a very high 1.6 job openings per unemployed person. And finally, while the core CapEx growth has been decelerating somewhat, they continue at record high. So, you put it all together, no surprise here, our economy is incredibly complicated. But in many ways, it's not. You know, think of it this way. You give people money, they'll spend it. When businesses create jobs, more people will have money to spend. When more money people have money to spend, businesses have to expand to address that increased demand. And when businesses expand, they create more jobs. Kind of the virtuous cycle, wouldn't you agree? And these three massive economic tailwinds are helping to continue to keep all this going. For investors, all of this stuff drives earnings, which helps to explain why strategists are looking for considerable earnings growth in 24 and 25. As we know, earnings are the most important long-term driver of stock prices, and that explains why stocks are up this year. The downside to these tailwinds, well, they're keeping inflation from cooling faster. The good news is that inflation has continued to drop for months, and these tailwinds have helped make this happen, whilst also, unfortunately, helping to prevent the economy, not unfortunately, helping to prevent the economy from going into a recession. You know, the surge in inflation last year was followed by a lull, with prices hardly moving in July and August, so that means on a year-over-year comparison, we may be seeing some increase toward the end of summer. So, And even though rental inflation has been coming down in the from the pace of the second half of last year, rents are still running at about a 6% annualized rate over 3, 6, and 12 months. And that's important because they make up a third of the weighting in the overall index and have been the perhaps major contributors to our persistently high inflation over the last couple of years. Well, we're going to take our first break. We'll be back after this to talk with you more about some economic news, look at some investing thoughts, and then share with you the outlook of some folks. So please come on back. You are listening to Money Management powered by the Opus 111 Group. My name is Mike Mayo. See you in a bit.